Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, college style, along with Aaron Fitt, live in studio in the podcast nook. I'm John Manuel. I love saying live on a podcast since it's not live, Aaron, but
right.
You are live and you are here in person, and we're not messing with Skype. So welcome back to Durham, and welcome back to another season of college baseball.
I'm ready to go, John. Let's do it.
We should do it. We're going to talk a lot of college baseball on this podcast. We're going to talk top 25, and this is really the kickoff for Baseball America's college coverage for 2012 and the college previews in full swing. And I don't want to list everything here that's going to be in that issue just because that will make for a very boring podcast. But suffice it to say, there's a lot of stuff going on the college preview issue, and it's also our early draft preview issue. So even if you don't like college baseball, if you like the draft, there's a lot to get ready for in the next couple of weeks. I also want to remind you that the 2012 Baseball America books are in full swing. It's book season at Baseball America, not Wabbit season, not Duck season, not even Fiddler Crab season. It's book season. The directory is going to press soon. The Prospect Handbook is out. It is shipping this week. If you order a Prospect Handbook from us, you'll have it in the next week with your I can't guarantee the U.S. mail, actually, Aaron, but you'll have it as soon as possible. And we are shipping out, if you ordered from us, you'll get your Prospect Handbook with your 31st Prospect Supplement. And you can order directly from us any of those books, the Almanac, the Directory, the Prospect Handbook, by calling 800-845-2726 or going to baseballamerica.com/store. You can also subscribe and start up with your college preview issue, Aaron. And there's a very familiar look for this year's college preview issue. There's a lot of Southeastern Conference feel to this because the Southeastern Conference right now is dominating college sports, whether it's football. I shouldn't say college basketball, they're dominating, but football and college baseball, they're dominating. And, of course, Kentucky is the number one team in college basketball right now. So
I don't know how they're doing in water polo, but as far as the sports we care about, I think they're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think they care. I don't think they play water polo, but if they did, I know that Bobby Kelty played water polo and then went to Ole Miss.
Is that right?
He did. He did play water polo, I believe, in high school. But I digress. I always liked Bobby Kelty. He was one of my favorite prospects. A real SEC feel to this year's preseason top 25 rankings, SEC at number 1, 3, 4, 8, 10, and 11. So six teams in the top 11. I don't know if we've gone back to look and see if that's unprecedented. We probably should put our crack research team, our intern, on that. But I don't think we had very long deliberations. Florida was an easy call for us at number 1 in the preseason. Is Florida? You've been the beat guy on this since 2007, and you've been covering college baseball for us since 2005. Really, is Florida the best team on paper going into the season since you got here and since you started doing this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think every other year we've had to really think about who was going to be number one, and even last year I think Florida was a fairly easy choice.
Yeah.
This year it was a slam dunk. I mean, We even gave them an 80 grade for the Baseball America OFP that we use. First time we've done that since we started this system. And originally I was a little hesitant to do that just because you don't give away 80 grades easily.
Right. But we only have one in the whole Prospect Handbook. I mean, there are 936 scouting reports if you order from us in the Prospect Handbook. And the 36 of those guys are not graded, but 900 of them are graded. And we gave one 80. In that whole book of 900 guys. Another one to one of your guys, to Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper, right.
And the Nationals organization. So, really, if you want to make the analogy, the Gators are kind of the Bryce Harper of college baseball. The difference is they're much more well-rounded and complete. They're not as loud, crazy, toolsy as Bryce Harper. They have tools as a team, but they are so steady, and they're about as safe a bet to get to the College World Series in the preseason as a team that I've seen. Yeah. They've gone back-to-back years. And, I mean, they were going to be in your 8 for Omaha last year anyway. But then when they got Preston Tucker back, to me that made a huge difference for them, because in this era, the BB Corbats era, it certainly makes a difference when you have legitimate power. And for me, that's the biggest separator with Florida.
Right.
They do have pitching depth, but there are other teams in our top 25 that have pitching depth. They have some athletic ability, but there are other teams that have athletic ability. They actually have proven power in Mike Zunino and Preston Tucker. To me, that makes a big difference. I don't know if it makes as big of a difference for you.
I think it does. I mean, and we saw that last year in Omaha with Florida. The power was a separator for them.
Yeah, it is.
And it's balanced, too. I mean, it's Tucker from the left side, Zanino from the right side. You know, I like the fact that you mentioned Tucker coming back as a big key for them. You know, this is a mature senior, a guy that can handle these bats and can hit the ball out of the park, and Zanino certainly qualifies as well after what he did last year. And then you throw in, you know, a guy like Austin Maddox, who who does have big-time raw power. We'll see if it's if he uses it better this year. You have Brian Johnson, who's got massive power from the left side.
Right.
I mean, this is a guy that people were raving about all summer with wood bats. Team USA said that he came in and took the best BP right away, coming off the College World Series.
He was impressive with Team USA. I'll say he looked he looked impressive on the mound. He looked impressive at the plate. He looked more impressive at the plate. I always regret leaving him out of the high school. Was he at, maybe he was number 200?
He was in the top 200 of high school.
I know he was a late entry into that fray out of high school. And he's their best player.
He is their best player. And I saw him also, you know, in the Cape in Yarmouth, and he had just an absolute moonshot out to right field. I
mean, bomb.
The guy is he's a beast, you know. And
it's hard to say that he's the best player considering that Mike Zanino is so good. But I really think Brian Johnson, I think Zanino might be their, and he's their everyday player, and he's a catcher. He may, you could even sort of say most valuable. But to me, Brian Johnson, really, just being a two-way guy like that, I guess also their question is, do they have the depth? It seems like they have the depth pitching-wise, that if they don't want to, if it's mid-season and Brian Johnson appears to be taxed by this two-way role, they have the depth and the flexibility that they can really pick their spots with him on the mound, can't they?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to see him on the mound every weekend. I think that part is a given because he's a really good pitcher. I mean, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the bat because it's I think it's a special bat. But, I mean, you know, this guy, not to give too much away, but our All-America balloting from the scouting directors, he's voted onto the first team by the scouting directors as a pitcher and the third team as a hitter.
Right.
You know, so he received, and that's not even counting the utility, the two-way category.
Right, some people voted for him. I remember typing up a couple ballots where he was voted as first base and pitcher and utility.
Yeah.
I mean, people, scouts have a great deal of respect for Brian Johnson, and so do, I think, coaches and other college baseball players because they see how good he is as a player and as a future player.
And just go back to what you said about how they have the depth, though, if they need to protect him a little bit. I think really you would see maybe a guy like Vikash Ramjet play some more first base, and you know Maddox maybe could DH.
Right.
They've got some other guys, some freshmen that they brought in that they could get some time at DH or first base. I mean, they've got a lot of depth for sure, but I do expect you'll see him in the rotation all year long.
Their holes last year appeared to be, I don't know, this will be the last point on Florida. If they had holes, you would say that it was at third base. They struggled there a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guess I really can't even think of another hole. But their outfield wasn't a super big strength for them last year. And they wrote, basically, I guess I'd say really their defense, because they were really trying to find ways to get Maddox's bat and Tucker and Johnson's bat all in the field at the same time. And sometimes they had to kind of shoehorn guys to do that. How's their third base situation been addressed, and what do they look like in the outfield this year after Bryson Smith, who really kind of solved their center field puzzle, has graduated?
I think you're still going to see a little bit of a platoon situation at third base. I mean, I think Zach Powers is the guy that I would say is probably the front runner. I think he's got more upside. But, you know, Cody Dent is still there.
Okay.
He's a defensive-oriented guy. I think you'll see some of him. You could see, you know, they've got a couple of freshmen with Casey Turgeon and Josh Tobias that will probably get time at second, maybe third. I mean, there's some, again, these are athletic guys.
Right.
That, you know, they're undersized guys, but they can really play the game. And I think they're going to be really good college players.
They sound like Tobias and Turgeon both sound like really good spark plug kind of college players.
Exactly. I think that's a good way to put it. So, as far as, you know, if I had to find a question mark with this team, besides, I mean, third base, like you mentioned, that is still one area that's a little bit unsettled. The outfield, to me, defensively, I think is going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be exceptional. I mean, I think Tyler Thompson profiles as probably, you know, a left fielder in pro ball.
Right.
They're going to put him probably in center because he does a good job out there. He's got good instincts.
He's no Matt Dendecker.
He takes good routes. He's not Matt Dendecker. He's probably not Bryson Smith. He just doesn't have the natural speed and athleticism of those guys. But, I mean,
I
think he'll
Sully.
Be fine. Get on it,
Sully. Come on. Get you center field.
Right.
I mean, the rest of your team's perfect. So.
Maybe you'll see a guy like Tobias out there. I mean, that's a guy that runs pretty well. I mean, that's another option potentially for them in center field.
That's an interesting point there. And on the mound, I don't mean to underplay it, but I think we all know, if you follow college baseball, you know Hudson Randall. You know how good he was last year. He's basically like a college Greg Maddox, basically.
Right,
I mean, he just carves people up. we know Carsten Whitson's talent. That was very evident last year in Omaha. And for much of the regular season, I think you might see Carsten Whitson unleashed a little bit more this year.
I agree.
The reins on him were very tight, as we wrote about last year in the Caldwell series. And Brian Johnson and their depth on the mound is exemplary. And that's really what separated them from Stanford, it appears, Aaron, is that Stanford has very intriguing talent. I think maybe in terms of raw talent, the second-ranked Cardinal might be a hair above Florida. It's close.
You can make that argument.
They're in the stratosphere. Physical talent. They're certainly more physical in some ways. But Stanford really, what does Stanford need to do to take that next step from super regional team last year to Omaha team this year?
I think, first of all, you know, they need Brett Mooneyham to come back strong. I mean, this is a guy that over the course of his career, you know, has always had big-time arm strength from the left side. He's a big guy. He looks the part, and it's just been a matter of throwing strikes. And
he's been an enigma.
In his career, he has not thrown enough strikes consistently. And, of course, he missed all last season with that finger injury.
Right.
They need him to be good this year. And signs were encouraging this fall. You know, it sounds like they think he's really turned a corner with the feel for pitching, the command. So I think that's a major key. I think A.J. Venegas on – you know, potentially the Sunday guy. I mean, that's not set in stone, but they would like him to be the Sunday guy. I think
right.
He's, again, he was a big-time recruit for them last year. Had, I think, kind of a disappointing freshman year. Again, the feel for pitching wasn't what you expected it to be, because coming in, he had a guy that had a reputation as being very polished.
Yep.
And, you know, he struggled, I think, to throw the breaking ball for strikes. Fastball command just wasn't where it should be. Again, they think he made a step forward in the fall, so I think he's a big key. Even Mark Appel, John, is a 500 pitcher in his career.
I agree. No, I mean, Mark, you know, Appel is not – he's number one on our college top 100 prospects list right now, and he's a Stanford ace, and there's a lot that goes into that. There's a heritage there. But to me, he's not – if you ask me who I'd rather have to pitch a college baseball game, Hudson Randall, 10 times out of 10 over Mark Appel.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, so that – I think Stanford physically, on the mound, they have a lot of physicality. In the field, they have a lot of it, whether it's Jake Stewart, Austin Wilson, Lonnie Coppola, Brian Regiera, Kane DeCroger, athletic, big, strong, fast. To me, their best player, Stephen Piscotty. He's the guy who's done the most.
Yes.
And he seemed like he opened a lot of eyes in the Cape Cod League, Aaron, just with not just the bat, but with his arm as well. And he seems like he's going to play a pretty – I don't know if he's going to play as big a role for Stanford as Brian Johnson does for Florida, but there are some parallels there.
It sounds like they would like to use him as a closer in addition to being the everyday third baseman. And this guy is one of the best pure hitters in the country. You know, and he's got some power and he's got arm strength at third. And, you know, the actions, I think, are good enough there. He's a good all-around player. He's a really good all-around player. But the arm, you know, off the mound is nasty. I mean, it's, you know, it's the low slot and it's mid-90s, and it's a really good power breaking ball. I don't think you'll ever see him for more than one inning.
Right.
He's going to be just a two-way guy that comes in and closes it out for him, hopefully. But, you know, I mean, again, this is another question for Stanford, though, is they don't have maybe the proven guy in the back of the bullpen. Piscotty hasn't really pitched in college.
Right.
They lost
Chris Reed. They lost Scott,
Chris
Reed. Scott Snodgrass. Both those guys were drafted pretty good. A couple power left-handers who really were their two main relievers last year.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, they've got good young arms. They do have Brian Busick, who's, you know, a veteran. Dean McArdle, I think, is a very valuable guy for them, whether he starts or is in the bullpen. I mean, he's just one of those college grinder types.
Guys, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, they've got arms, but they've got to answer questions on the mound. And frankly, they've got to answer questions in the lineup. I mean, they need Brian Regiera to, you know, he was good last year. He needs to be better as a sophomore.
Right.
Austin Wilson, I think, needs to be a lot better as a sophomore. You know, even Kane DeCroger had a really disappointing second half last year. He needs to put that behind him offensively and defensively. And
Kane DeCroger is one of the bigger question marks, I think, in the whole country. If you're listening to this because of the draft part of it, Kane DeCroger entered last year, I'm pretty sure, as our number one sophomore.
Quite possibly.
Coming into last year.
He was
wasn't
very
number
high.
One, he was number two. Unsigned second-round pick out of high school. We weren't super high on Kane DeCroger out of high school. He didn't have as big of a reputation maybe as some other people had. Sometimes I think this also happens with Northern California kids because scouts don't always, especially a guy who's a Northern California kid and is a Stanford signee, sometimes they're just like, okay, we'll check back on you in 3 years. So sometimes those guys get ranked a little bit lower in our high school rankings come out of high school in the draft. But DeKroger's been a little underwhelming in college. I don't think there's another way to put it.
Yeah.
Just seeing him last year in the Super Regional, there's athleticism there. And then he's a little bit more of an unknown for scouts, too, Aaron, in that he did not play last summer. He was offered a spot on Team USA on the college national team, but it was not guaranteed that he would play every day. So he wound up just working out basically the whole summer. Didn't go play summer ball like he had the year before in the NECBL. And to me, Kenny DeKroger has a lot to prove.
He's been pushed in the fall for his shortstop job by Lonnie Coppola, who's, I think, a really good player, the most underrated player on this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's easily overshadowed, but I think he's dynamic, and I think he's – I love his swing. I love the energy he plays with, his athleticism. He plays a good shortstop. And I had scouts tell me in the fall that he looked better at short than Kenny DeKroger. So I suspect you'll probably still see DeKroger there, but don't be shocked if they end up switching positions in the middle infield.
There's a lot of talent there for the for Mitt Romney's old roommate to work with, and Mark Marquess, who indeed was the freshman year roommate of former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney when Mitt Romney was at Stanford for a year. So Mark Marquess has a lot to work with there, and I think you pointed out, you know, Stanford Marquess has been there a long time, but it's also been 23 seasons, I guess, since their last national championship when they went back to back in 87 and 88. So, you know, Stanford, you know, Mike Mussina is not even in the major leagues anymore. I'm not sure who the top Stanford pitcher in the big leagues would be right now, Jeremy Guthrie, but you know, they have been to Omaha. I guess it's five times since 1999.
Six times.
5 years in a row. I guess it was 5 years in a row.
And then again in 07 or 08.
Yeah, so they went in 95, 97, and then 99 through 2003, and then again 2008. So there've been a lot of Omaha trips since that championship, but no championships for Stanford. The championship has resided in the Southeastern Conference the last 3 years. In the last 2 years, its home has been Columbia, South Carolina, home of the Gamecocks and Ray Tanner. This is going to be a different club. If South Carolina win three-peats to become the first team since Southern Cal to three-peat, Aaron, it's going to be a different cast of characters. The guys who are there that people know are Michael Roth, Christian Walker, Adam Matthews to a lesser extent. Matt Price, everybody knows. Let's focus a little bit on the new faces at South Carolina, because this is a pretty exciting freshman class. Especially with three guys who look like they're going to start every day, Grayson Griner behind the plate, Joey Pancake at shortstop, and Tanner English in center field.
Yeah, and I don't think English is a lock to start in center field. I wouldn't be surprised.
He's getting pushed, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got a battle for a spot because they've got Evan Marzilli, who can play center very well. He's a very good defensive center fielder. And they've got Jake Williams as a veteran guy that could play the outfield.
Obviously came up big in the College World Series finals last year.
Right.
No outfield assists all year and then throws out a guy
at
the plate.
That's right. Good memory. But
that's all I got here.
But, you know, I mean, I think that English can be a dynamic player, and I think he will be, and I think it's going to be hard for them to keep him out of the lineup. But, you know, he's got some polishing to do offensively.
Right.
And Pancake, this is the whole key for South Carolina. They've got new guys up the middle at every position, unless they have Marzilli in center. You know, we always talk about being strong up the middle, and I think this is South Carolina. If you talk to their coaching staff, this is their concern about this team. I mean, I think they expect to be good.
Right, but last year they had veterans back there behind the plate in Beery and Thomas, correct?
That's right, and they had, you know.
Peter Mooney wasn't automatic at shortstop like they thought he would be, but he was very dependable at shortstop. Scott Wingo was my preseason All-SEC second baseman, and he lived up to it.
Yes, he did.
That guy had a great senior season. It was just so dependable for them for several years defensively, and he grew into it offensively. And we all saw again in the finals how clutch his defense was.
He was such a leader.
And JBJ, I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr., was, you know, a defining player for them for the last 2 years in many ways.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's again, that's a very significant question. Is how well these new guys work into that mix. And, you know, I think they're very excited about Grayson Griner. I mean, every time I talk to one of the coaches down there, that's one of the first guys they bring up.
It sounds like they should be, because offensively he has some real potential, it sounds
He's I hadn't seen him before. I was down there last week, and, you know, he's an impressive-looking kid physically, and he's, you can tell he's strong. You know, I think he's going to hit for power pretty early on, and they're pleased with his development behind the plate, and they also have Dante Rosenberg back there, who's a veteran guy that I think can handle a staff and catch and throw, which is a nice luxury to have.
South Carolina has a long history, and Ray Tanner has a long history of offensive-minded catchers. Like, they had a JUCO guy back there in the turn of the century named Brandon Pack, who had a huge year. obviously Landon Powell.
Justin Dallas comes to mind.
Justin Dallas was a good, guy. Phil Disher was an offensive catcher. So they do have a long history of those kind of guys. I think Ray Tanner ascribes to the New York Yankees philosophy, which is if you hit and if you can just catch the ball and you aren't going back to the backstop every 5 seconds, you're going to be just fine. Because so much of stopping the running game is your pitchers. And if you don't get on base against Michael Roth, you can't exploit him in the running game anyway.
And I think back to the big defense feature we did in last year's college preview, and I believe I remember Ray saying that, throwing guys out is not what he's looking for from his catcher. You know, I mean, you want to control the running game as much as you can, but, you know, it's not, you know, there's only so many occasions over the course of a game where that really comes into play. So I think that, and Grainer has arm strength too.
Right. I mean, we're not saying he's Jesus Montero.
Right.
But we are saying that he's an offensive minded catcher, and it looks like they could use the offense, and they have a chance to be pretty offensive. I still think significantly.
Yeah,
Aaron.
I agree.
And to me, the sleeper for them also is Adam Matthews. He was an athletic senior, and his tools wise, he compares quite favorably to Jackie Bradley in terms of he's a little more physical. He probably runs better.
He's
faster. I mean. He has a chance, to me, to have a real breakout senior season if he can stay healthy.
It's a great call. I mean, you know, you saw the jump that Scott Wingo made as a senior, and really over the course of his career, I expect you'll see that from Adam Matthews as a senior too. I think he'll be really good. And then, you know, in the middle infield, you mentioned Joey Pancake as a really key guy for them. Freshman at shortstop. I think he's more of an offensive player, but he throws very, very well. I mean, this is a guy that's 95 off the mound.
The way Joey Pancake fits the best to me, just talking to scouts about him last year for the draft, the way he fits the Gamecocks the best is this guy thinks he's the cock of the walk. He is a very confident player, and he has that.
Absolutely.
He has that confidence we talked about with South Carolina that is unique in that they have really an endearing confidence. It's not swagger.
Because
to me, swagger is a little off-putting. I'm a little tired of swagger myself. But they are good. They know it, and they know they don't have to tell you about it. Whether it's in their – they just let their actions speak for themselves. And they play with such confidence, and they really don't – they have no idea of how to play not to lose. They play to win, and they know how to make winning plays. It's really
– it's
hard to put into words.
It feels to me, you know, and obviously I have a – I'm approaching this from a certain perspective, but they feel more like the New England Patriots kind of quiet confidence than the Baltimore Ravens swaggering around in your face.
They are definitely more – they're a little bit more Vince Wilfork than Ray Lewis.
That's it.
So to put it in the football terms. And the guys who embody that the most to me are Roth and Price. And those guys walk on the mound expecting to win. And Price is like the oldest 23-year-old junior ever. Did this guy go on like a LDS mission or something? I mean, he is such an old-looking dude. But that's the other last question with South Carolina to me is how successful can he be in that conversion to starting? And if they have any trouble in the bullpen, are they going to revert back? My feel is that guy's going to start most of the regular season. And then when it gets to the postseason moment of truth, Matthew Price out of the bullpen.
I was asking Coach Tanner about this last week, and I said, you know, all right, so be honest with me. When do you think we're going to see Price in the bullpen? He said, well, ask me. It might be first weekend. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you just – they want to give the kid a chance to start because he's meant so much to this program, you know, and he wants to start.
Yep.
And so they want to give him a chance to do it because they feel like, hey, we owe him that much. And, you know, one thing we've never seen from Price – in a relief role is the changeup because he hasn't needed it. He's been so dominant with the fastball and the hard breaking ball. But
right. We've seen everything else. We've seen one inning saves. We've seen 96. We've seen 91. We've seen 90 pitches. We've seen three quick outs. We've seen everything in between with that guy.
And he's got a changeup is the thing that people don't realize. He's got a good changeup. I think he could be fine. I mean, better than fine in the rotation. And certainly if they need him in the bullpen, yeah, that's an option. But I think, you know, when they brought in Forrest Kumis, he was a guy that they kind of envisioned as their closer of the future.
Right.
And, you know, the future is now for that. I mean, I think he can be very good back there. He was good as a starter, but I think he fits even better to me as a reliever, a guy that can just come right at you. I mean, he's got the same kind of mound demeanor, you know, the nasty streak a little bit. And it's a quick arm, and I think it's going to be a resilient arm. I think he's going to be great back there. And they've got a ton of depth. They still have Colby Holmes, the guy we even mentioned. He gets lost in the shuffle.
Very solid college
pitcher. Nice Sunday
starter. I think a nice prospect as
yeah.
well. I think Colby Holmes has a shot. Forrest Kumis, to me, is going to be dynamite in the bullpen. So We're 20-some minutes into this podcast, and
we might
talked
have to pick
about
up the pace
teams.
A little bit, huh?
So we're going to pick up the pace. But those three teams are fascinating to me, Aaron. They're separate. To me, they're a grade above everybody else. Florida is a grade above everyone else. Stanford is the closest analog to Florida in terms of raw talent. And then South Carolina is in a class of its own because they're the two-time defending national champions. I'm not trying to lump the rest of the field. I'm not saying there's a cliff here, but I do think those three teams deserve separate consideration. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the SEC, because one thing that stands out to me about these six SEC teams in the top 11, and there are four we haven't talked about yet, is a couple more in the SEC West. And that was a weak part of the SEC last year, and you had Ole Miss and LSU miss out. Well, LSU missed out on regionals. Did Ole Miss miss out? No, they went to regionals.
They both missed out.
Okay. But you had Mississippi State rally late and get to a super regional and put a scare into Florida. But, you know, Auburn was down last year. The SEC West in general was down. This year, I don't think that's going to be the case. We have both Arkansas and LSU in our top eight. And let's talk about those two teams, kind of lump them together. What gives Arkansas the edge, and what makes LSU potentially so much better this year than they wound up being last year?
Well, I think Arkansas is more balanced than LSU. I think that they have more offensive firepower. I think that's a big separator. You know, you look at LSU, and it's the team that hit, 19 home runs or something last year?
Right, and Mikey Mottuk hit most of them.
Right, and you know, he's gone. And I think that I like LSU, some of their veteran guys. I mean, I think, you know, it's nice to have a Austin Nola and a Tyler Hanover. And, you know, there's a couple of nice experienced pieces there, but they're not going to hit for a lot of power. And, you know, and it's another thing. I was talking with Paul Mainieri in the coaches convention about his team. And it's one of those things that when you break it down, you know, and the speed, they're not particularly fast. They're not particularly powerful. You know, the hitting, they don't have gaudy batting averages coming back.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those teams that when you put it all together, the sum is greater than the parts. It's one of those kind of teams. And
they really don't have a black hole offensive. They don't really have a spot in the lineup, Aaron, where a pitcher can say, oh, that's an out. I'm going to go get an out, you know, right there. They seem like they have a lot of solid college bats.
Yeah.
But where their separator, to me, is on the mound.
Absolutely.
But both these teams stand out for me for their power stuff on the mound. I mean, I know we're in a pitching and defense era in college baseball, but the pitching on these two clubs – is pretty significant.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you talk about LSU with, you know, Kevin Gossman and Ryan Eads, a couple of guys who are going to throw mid-90s on you, and then you got Kurt McCune, who I think is, again, you're talking about a very, you know, polished, strike-throwing Sunday guy, a nice Sunday starter. You know, certainly
in the Colby
gives you a different
Holmes
look.
Mode. Colby Holmes Colby is Holmes better, mode. But in that same mold.
Yep. And then at Arkansas, you know, DJ Baxendale, who had a strong case, I think, last year as SEC Pitcher of the Year. He had a great season.
In a loaded SEC, but he was phenomenal.
He beat most of the top guys in the league, too. I mean, he
was the Tommy Hanschel of the Southeastern Conference.
That's pretty good. All right. Ryan Stanek, you can expect to take a big step forward. And he started to show it last year at the end of the year. Got off to a little bit of a slow start to freshman year. You know, wasn't completely...
A lot of expectations on that guy.
Yeah, and you know what? He wasn't... I think he was dealing with an illness. That kind of thing slowed him down. For a while, they even thought he might have had mono. He didn't have mono, but that slowed him down. By the end of the year, I mean, I saw him in Hoover at the SEC tournament, and his best start of the year, he looked good. I mean, he was, you know, that's what we were waiting to see.
Right.
Carried it over into the summer. This guy's got electric stuff. You know, I mean, we're talking some of the best pure stuff in college baseball. You can make that argument. I mean, maybe not better than Appel, but it's in the same discussion.
To me, the three guys who have the best stuff are Stanek, Gossman, and Appel. I mean, Gossman.
Maybe
probably...
Marcus Stroman I'll throw in there, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we shouldn't forget about Marcus Stroman. But among these top 10 teams, Duke not there. But, yeah, we're talking about three of the top eight teams in the country. And three of the reasons that they are just the live arms. And like you said, you saw Stanek at his best in the SEC tournament. I like a guy who shows that kind of development over his freshman year. Has some stumbles, has some adversity, overcomes it, and allows his talent to shine when his team needs it the most and when the most pressure is on. To me, the separator in these two clubs, I think they're very similar clubs. Arkansas has a couple of guys who I think can really make a step forward offensively in Ficicello and Matt Reynolds. I like Matt Reynolds. He didn't hit last year. I just like them as a player, though, seeing with Team USA, the college national team last summer. Yeah. There's a lot there.
You're not alone on that, John. There's a lot of scouts who were very intrigued by Reynolds. I think people expect him to have a big year, and the coaches do too.
I think he's athletic enough to probably play shortstop.
Absolutely.
But as a third baseman, he's a dynamic defender.
Right.
And in today's college game, you kind of need a dynamic, agile defender at third base. And I think there's more there in the bat.
And we talk about the value of having an experienced infield, especially now where every out is so valuable.
That's right.
You know, the teams that don't throw the ball away, I think, have a big advantage.
And steady seniors.
And you're talking about Tim Carver, a fifth-year senior now, I think, at shortstop. Bo Bigham, senior at second baseman, who I think is a really good player.
Bo Bigham is like an eighth-year senior, it feels like. I mean, you know, that guy seems like he's been at Arkansas for a while. So.
And then Ficicello is an outstanding defender at first base. I mean, I love this team's athleticism, even the outfield. I mean, Anderson and Morris, you know, those guys really run. Matt Vincent, he's got arm strength. I mean, they've got athletes all over. I think they've got power. I think they didn't hit for average last year at all. They're going to hit for much better average this year. They're going to hit for more power. And the other X factor, if you're comparing them against LSU, is I like Arkansas better in the bullpen with Nolan Sandburn, who just a dynamic, you know, closer back there. Yeah, coming off a great summer. Another mid-90s guy with a ridiculous breaking ball. LSU doesn't have an answer for that.
They don't. Let's wrap up our SEC theme to the top of this poll with teams 10 and 11, Vanderbilt and Georgia. First, let's talk real briefly about the Bulldogs, because I just think I just want to throw this out there. I'm really fascinated to see what a Georgia Bulldogs team will do when they don't have to respond to this awful off-field tragedies they've had the last couple weeks. I guess one was off the field and one was on. But 2010, they had to deal with the Chance Veazey and his injury in the fall. Last year, the on-field incident with Jonathan Taylor. I mean, no team should go through one of those, but they had to go through it back-to-back seasons and not – you really can't judge their program the last 2 years in terms of on-field results when you put it in that mix, but you can judge the fact that they didn't fall apart. Last year's a team they rallied. I think it's actually one of the best signs of Dave Pernow as a coach.
Absolutely.
Is that they've gone through all this turmoil in these two things, and they haven't had it easy on the field either. And he has a lot – they don't have mass transfers. They haven't had mass of guys jettisoning to go to JUCO ball. He's kept most of those guys together, and a lot of those individual players got better. I think Michael Palazzone is one of those guys. I kind of like Georgia. I like the aggressive ranking of Georgia because I believe in these players they've been through so much.
Completely agree, John. And you know what? This team, they had a very challenging schedule early on last year.
Yeah, that's another great point. They did.
And, you know, they It was it kind of put them behind the eight ball with the Jonathan Taylor thing and with the schedule early on. So their overall record was not gaudy. And then you know they had to win I think three games in the SEC tournament in order to if I recall in order to
I think
be
you're right.
eligible for the postseason.
They had to rally late to be eligible for the postseason. And again, they were at their best when they needed it.
And you know those were tough teams they were playing. I mean. I'm trying to remember exactly who it was, but I mean, I'm pretty sure they played
Well, they were
Florida.
In the SEC East.
Yeah.
They were playing the Giants. They were playing the big boys. It was like playing in the American League East.
Right. So, I mean, you know, look, Colby May is a guy that I think is interesting to point out because he's a guy who took the Veazey thing and the Taylor thing very hard, you know, and he kind of went into a tailspin. You know, he's from what I've heard, he's back now and more confident. And, you know, they're going to kind of be careful with him. They're going to protect him a little bit and build his confidence back up. But he had a great fall for them. And he was a very good player as a freshman. He's a good athlete. He can play either corner spot. They like him at first base right now. He's got power. You know, that's a guy that I think you can expect to have a big step forward kind of a year. And they hope Peter Verdon does that as well. That's another key guy for them. I feel like athletically, you know, a guy who can really make the whole offense go if he's locked in. You know, this guy runs like a 6'3". I mean, he's really, really fast, and he can do it all. He needs to put it together. Now's the time. Hunter Cole, the freshman they brought in, that I think you can expect to hear his name a lot over the next 3 years.
It's a guy they have high expectations for. Last year it was in Hoover. You saw him beat South Carolina and Florida back-to-back, 4-2 and 4-3. Those were the games they had to win to get in. And, of course, they finished second in the Oregon State Regional. Don't forget, they went out to Corvallis and
it was a very competitive games against Oregon State, too.
Yeah, they did. And they lost to Creighton 2-1 to Ty Block, I believe, who's going to be a good draft this year. So yeah, Georgia went through a lot, and they came out better for it. Vanderbilt obviously had the best season in Vanderbilt baseball history. They finally busted down that door. They did not win the national championship, but they were, what, I think third or fourth in our final poll. They lost a lot, Aaron, but this is really going to be a season of let's see some of those young arms really step forward. No other team in the country has a number one, a first-round pick stepping into the rotation like they do. You know, Carson Whitson, meet Tyler Beattie. I do think Carson Whitson is more equipped to step right in as a weekend guy. A little bit more is needed from Tyler Beattie because there's a lot of change on this Vanderbilt club.
You're absolutely right. That's a good way to put it. I mean, Florida, heck, they didn't even really need to have Whitson in the rotation last year. He didn't want to.
He elbowed his way in ahead of DeSclafani and Panagiotis. That's right, the future starter for your Greek World Baseball Classic
team.
Right. He won't return my email. Alex, if you're listening to this, get back to me, johnmanuel@baseballamerica.com. We need you on the Greek team. I've already got a replacement for you, Johns Hopkins. Alex Eliopoulos is ready to pick up that ball.
Nice.
Anyway, I digress. But he, like you said, Carson Whitson really elbowed some people aside who had some significant talent and track record. Tyler Beattie's doing that to a lesser extent. He's elbowing aside some pretty good arms, but they need him at Vanderbilt.
Yes, they do. I think they need him to come in and be, you know, like Whitson was last year, like Matt Perk was the year before that at TCU.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, you know, he's got that kind of ability.
In 3 years in a row, we've had an unsigned first-round pick in college baseball. It's not, I can get used to that.
Three or four with Cole.
Oh, yeah, it is four. Garrett Cole, Matt Perk, Carson Whitson. Wow, Tyler Beattie's got a lot to live up to.
Those guys have all been, you know, had really good careers. I mean,
yeah, they did.
Whitson's certainly not finished with his yet. But, yeah, it's there's going to be a lot of expectations on him. But, you know, this guy is like those other guys we've talked about. It's power stuff.
Yeah.
And it's command. We didn't even mention Dylan Covey as another one.
Oh, yeah. But, I kind of forgot about it. Well, he's in a little bit of a different case with the diabetes diagnosis. Right. He gets a pass on last year.
So anyway, I think potentially this team to me is so intriguing because it's a high-risk, high-reward kind of team. I think there's a ton of upside, you know, but it all depends on how the pitching comes together. I mean, I think the lineup is really good. I think they're going to score a lot of runs. They're going to be dynamic, even without Westlake and Esposito. I mean, I love the – you know, the Tony Kemp, of course, as we all know, is a spark plug atop the lineup.
Yeah, the best player in college baseball that you can look down at.
That's right. Riley Reynolds, you know, and great bat handler. I mean, a guy that does a lot for you, winning player, veteran. Mike Yastrzemski is a really good player. I think Connor Harrell's going to have a good year as an athletic guy.
They have – I know they lost Darren Westlake and Kirk Casale, who are a couple of older veteran power guys, but they have – significant power potential,
yes,
even with
do.
The bats.
Yes, they do.
To me, the breakout guy for them is Konrad Gregor.
Completely agree.
Name I love to say,
obviously. That guy was born to hit. He's a big physical guy. He's going to hit a lot more home runs. And you know, he's going to be one of those guys who hits for power and average. He's a tough out, too. He's got a patient approach.
Let's face it. One thing that's hanging over this whole conversation and hanging over the whole college baseball season that we need to address is the bats, Aaron. Is it fair to say that, just to sum up, we've gone over so many issues with the bats. Let's summarize real quick. We expect the bats to perform better this year. We expect college baseball to be a little more offensive as the players are more used to the bats and as the manufacturers are more used to manufacturing bats to these specifications.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Reports from across the country indicate that people hit from a lot more power this fall than they did last fall. So, yes, I think you will see... it's not going to be a return to what it was 2 years ago, obviously. But, you know, I don't think you'll have teams hitting 12 home runs as a team anymore.
Unless it's Texas.
Unless it's Texas.
But let's put it this way. Like Tyler Hanover is a player we mentioned in the top 10. That's a 5'7 guy at LSU who's a good hitter. But he was a guy who with the old bats, you would have expected that guy to hit 15 home runs a year with the old bats. With these bats, I think he's going to be lucky if he hits 8. But that's as it should be. But I think it's more realistic that he hits 8 this year than the 0, 1, or 2 that he hit last year. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to put it. Yeah, and
he's a microcosm guy to me. The small...
Keith Werman is another guy that comes to mind. I mean, that's not a guy who's ever going to hit for power, but the bats really killed him last year. I mean, his average plummeted. He just wasn't strong enough to hit it through the infield,
that's it.
Really.
That's it.
You know, maybe this year, if he's gotten stronger and if the bats are a little better, maybe, you know, he can get back to hitting some more line drives over the infield.
I think that's about as much as I want to say about the bats.
Yep.
The less we talk about the bats, the better for college baseball.
One more thought on Vanderbilt before we move on. I mean, getting back to the upside here,
Because they have upside.
You're looking at the rotation with Kevin Zomek, Tyler Beede, and Sam Selman. I mean, my goodness. These guys, if they all come together, they could all be first-round picks.
Those are three really live arms. Two of them are from the left side. Sam Selman's a guy we've been talking to scouts about for 3 years since he was in high school. And when he got to Vanderbilt, he was the pick to click for several scouts. It was like, watch that guy in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's been hard to get playing time or mound time at Vanderbilt because they had such depth last year.
And he just wasn't throwing enough strikes.
And that's it. He didn't throw enough strikes to get that mound time. It wasn't like it was unfair. He just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Mark Lamb was better. Corey Williams was better. Obviously, Sonny Gray was better. Grayson Garvin, SEC Pitcher of the Year, was better. They had plenty of other options of guys who could throw strikes with quality stuff if Sam Selman didn't. But he seems like the guy who had a good fall for them. So maybe he's ready to make that next step.
And getting Will Kleinert back for another year was crucial for them because, you know, he's a guy that gives you some experience to anchor the bullpen. They've got a lot of very talented young arms. They needed that one veteran out there.
There does seem like there's a pretty decent gap in the rest of the SEC. Only one other SEC team in our top 25. That's Ole Miss. But Ole Miss, Mississippi State, how many teams do we think the SEC is going to send to regionals this year? 9?
That sounds about right. I mean, we talked about ranking Mississippi State. You know, that's one of the last teams out, maybe the last team out of the rankings. I like Kentucky's team. You know, I think Kentucky could have a pretty good year this year. I suspect they'll be back in regionals.
And then we have a new coach at Tennessee in Dave Serrano. I think we don't expect the Vols to be a factor this year.
No.
But I would be surprised if Dave Serrano did not have success at Tennessee. He had great success at UC Irvine. He had success at Cal State Fullerton.
I think it's a lot harder at Tennessee than it was at Fullerton, which is a weird thing to say because, you know, he's got a lot more resources at Tennessee, for sure. He's going to have a lot more fans. But, you know, in Fullerton, you can kind of get your Fullerton guys who want to be Titans, and, you know, there's so many baseball players out there. And now he's in the SEC East. Well, you've got Vanderbilt and South Carolina and Florida. Those guys are never going away as long as those coaches are there.
And let's face it, Tennessee athletics, they really want some good news. They've had the tragedy with Pat Summitt. You know, they had the scandal in their men's basketball program. You know, the football program is not what it once was. Those fans are thirsting for a winner. So if Dave Serrano has any success there, those fans will respond because they really could use it. We've got a couple questions on the Twitter machine. Dustin Madison asks Aaron, how do you see Missouri fitting into the dynamics of Southeastern Conference baseball? This is a good transition because we've got a lot of conference movement, obviously not necessarily in 2012 for college baseball, but Missouri long-term, I mean, this is a team that made 7 straight regional appearances in the Big 12. How much harder is it going to be for Texas A&M and Missouri when they get into the SEC?
It'll be harder. I mean, the SEC is more complete than the Big 12, and I like the Big 12. I don't think it... You know, I don't think it necessarily gets its due sometimes as a baseball conference, but you know, the SEC is a different beast, and I do think Missouri, though. I mean, look, this is a good program, a program that sometimes flies under the radar, but they went to, I think, 7 straight regionals.
Yeah, and they've got some big league alumni who've done pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Max Scherzer and
Aaron Crow got the
Aaron
big Crow, last year.
And I think Kyle Gibson can get there, and you know, it's. I really like the Missouri program, and I think that they do a great job there. They usually are able to get, you know, occasionally for every year or two, it seems they're able to get a blue chip recruit.
Yep.
And they develop talent very well.
They do. I think their track record on the pitching side, developing talent, is quite good.
But I kind of lump them in with, you know, like a Kentucky, where they're a little bit weather disadvantaged compared to the rest of the SEC. They don't have maybe the tradition or you know, the rabid fan support of the LSUs and the Arkansas's and South Carolinas. So, you know, it's going to be harder. I mean, and Kentucky has had some years where they've been pretty good, and they've been in regionals. But unfortunately, I think that's probably, I don't want to say the ceiling for Missouri, but, you know, maybe they can be a little bit above
That's the realistic ceiling.
That's the realistic ceiling.
To put it in Baseball America prospect hand terms, it's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Let's transition real quick, Aaron, into the Big 12. And we did talk a lot of SEC, and you know what? That's going to be the bulk of the podcast because that's just the reality of the situation. The SEC is the big dog in college baseball. Who are your biggest surprises that you would say maybe in the top 15? Who's the team that you think fans might be the most surprised is that high? Would it be Arizona?
Probably Arizona. I mean, that's a team that you know, we're pretty aggressive on. I really like their team. I mean, you know,
I like their team too. That was my first when I was editing the capsules. That was the first team where I was like, are they too high? Let's really. I really wanted to bear down on Arizona, but they have a proven Friday guy. They have really intriguing talent in the rest of their rotation.
Yes.
One of their bigger question marks is their bullpen, but Andy Lopez, as you wrote about, has a very nice history, whether it's guys like Corey Burns, whether it's big arms like Daniel Schlereth, big arms, finesse guys. He has a nice long history going back to Pepperdine, Florida.
Yep.
And now at Arizona, this guy knows how
He believes in the bullpen, yeah, and it's like Jim Morris.
Exactly. I was going to say, he doesn't get the love from me like Jim Morris does. You know, we built great bullpens here at the University of Miami. But I got to go change a diaper. But but Andy Lopez has that same tradition at wherever he's coached. And the other difference with Arizona is that they are moving into this new ballpark, and they're more likely to host, Aaron. And they haven't been to – they got to Omaha the hard way in 2004, and when they had their last great team in 2008. They went on the road and won a regional, but it was just too hard to win on the road 2 weekends in a row. They lost a super against a great Miami team.
And that's
the best team they've had since then.
And that Arizona team, by the way, had a big league bullpen with Daniel Schlereth, Ryan Perry, and Jason Stoffel.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a big three back there? That's – absurd.
Jason Stoffel was the worst of those three guys, and
he might have been the best in college.
He was probably the best in college, and the other two guys are in the big leagues, and he's not. But Arizona, the thing that really stands out for them is their athleticism.
Yes,
and they are, I think, very well suited to play in college baseball's common era.
Absolutely. I mean, this team, athleticism, that's the word for it. They've got a lot of speed. I think they've got great defenders. I think that a guy like Alex Mejia, a lot of people maybe don't know about as much as they should. He's a really good player at shortstop. I mean, this is a guy that makes highlight reel plays, but he's also very steady, and he's a real leader for them. You know, he's a great player that's a little under the radar because physically, you know, he doesn't really run. He's not a big power guy. The scouts don't love him, but the more you watch him, the more you like him. I think he kind of is the heart and soul of this team. Him and Robert Refsnyder, who I think is just a fantastic player that, you know, can really hit. He's got, you know, people in the Cape told me last year he had one of the best swings in the league. He's gotten stronger. He's not a real big guy physically, but I think he's going to hit for some power.
Always been a Joey Rickard guy, too.
Joey Rickard.
Out of the Vegas area, high school-wise.
Yeah.
Always been a Rickard guy, exactly. Athletic, runs, very well suited for the move to High Corbett Field. I mean, they played in their old ballpark, Packard, Sunset Field at Packard's at Arizona State. What was it, Jerry Kendall Field at Sunset Stadium or something like that. I mean, it had multiple names.
Right.
That was a big yard, too. But High Corbett Field, a very large ballpark.
And I think their plan is to move the fences in, but it won't be this year, so it's going to play big.
But you've all seen High Corbett Field. If you listen to this podcast, you've seen Major League. So High Corbett Field, where the Indians had spring training in Major League.
That's
so
right.
We're looking forward to Andy Lopez rolling up to the first game of the season in the tricked-out bug with the Rolls-Royce
nice.
Front like Willie Mays Hayes
nice.
Did. As the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, let's stick out west real quick. Easy for me to say. UCLA from the Pac-10 is in our top 25, down at 14. We've also got Oregon State. The O State Ball is down there at 23. How's the Pac-12 shape?
Arizona State as well, but they're not postseason eligible.
I forgot about Arizona State. They're at 17. I'm obviously still using the same Pac-10, but how's the Pac-12 shape up? We don't have Oregon in this year's rankings. I don't see Cal from last year's College World Series. Last year's one of their biggest stories. If it weren't for the bats, Cal would have been the biggest story in college baseball last year, with going from death's door to Omaha.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a new coaching change at Southern California with Frank Cruz made the full-time head coach, but changing his staff. How's the rest of the Pac-12 shape up?
I think the Pac-12 is going to be very competitive.
Plus, we have Utah in the league this year, correct?
Utah, that's right. It's another addition.
Minus C.J. Crone, unfortunately.
But they've, you know, they've got some arms. I think they're going to be pretty competitive. But it's hard, going to be hard for them to make much of a splash, I think, in their first year in the league, because I do think that the league is probably, you know, 8 or 9 teams deep as far as really good teams. I mean, Washington State's going to be very offensive.
Plus, I didn't even mention UW and Wazoo, which was my mistake.
Washington State is a team that you know, has to replace his whole weekend rotation, so it's a major question on the mound. But, boy, I think they're going to score a lot of runs. I think they're going to be dangerous on offense. I think Oregon, you know, should be better than they were last. Last year was disappointing for them. They still have some arms. They still have some athletes.
They should have finished well. They got going, but it was just too late.
Yeah. But, you know, the teams in the top 25, We talked about Stanford and Arizona. I think UCLA, again, is a team that's going to be a lot better offensively. I mean, all those guys are veterans now for the most part. You know, the Kiefer, Jelilich, Amaral guys in the outfield are going to be good players, and they're going to be better because I think the bats really hurt them last year. I think their bats are better this year. They had a much better fall offensively. You know, Eric Snyder is a guy that I think is going to be a difference maker as a freshman, and so is the infielder that I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know their infielder. I'm a little bit behind on that with my UCLA Bruins issue. But
Kevin Kramer, that's who I'm thinking of. He's going
to
be
the other issue
player
for them is that most teams, like you wrote, miss a Bauer and a Cole, and they just can't come back from that. But that's just not going to be the case with this team. The big question for them is less how Adam Plutko and Nick Vandertwig and Zach Weiss and how those guys perform in their rotation. I think it's more Scott Griggs at the back of their bullpen. Because in their bullpen, you know, Vandertwig was okay last year, but he wasn't a natural back there. They missed Dan Klein, that automatic closer like they had in 2010. Scott Griggs got a great arm. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny on Scott Griggs this year. He might be the best draft prospect in Southern California on the college side, sad as that is to say. So there's a lot of scrutiny on that guy, and there's going to be a lot of heat, and we'll see how he steps forward in the more pressure for his role on the team and draft pressure.
He's kind of in that Sam Selman boat, you know, a guy that came in with a lot of arm strength. He's always had arm strength.
He was the USS Selman.
He, like Selman, was a top 200 guy out of high school, and it's taken him 2 years to get the pitchability down, you know, and again, they think he took a step forward in the fall. We'll see how it goes. But the other thing that concerns with UCLA is I don't think it's a very deep pitching staff with experienced guys. You know, they've got some newcomers that they kind of like, but it's not like last year. I think last year's staff was considerably deeper. So that's, you know, losing Bauer and Cole is one thing, but, you know, I think losing those two guys makes you have to move Vandertig into the number two role.
Right.
And, you know, Weiss goes from the midweek guy to the Sunday guy. I mean, it's nice to have those guys in auxiliary roles more than – you know, now because now you've just got more pressure than the rest of the staff.
The big key for me is that Vandertig's name is Vandertig, not Van Der Tig, because we had Zach Von Tersch, and then who was the other guy at Missouri? Who was that Van?
There was a guy at Baylor, wasn't there?
I don't remember. The Vans weren't as good as the Van Der, I think, can be. So I think it's very key that where the space is in Nick Vandertig's name. I digress with a bad joke. Aaron, let's wrap up the podcast with a couple of pitching and defense kind of teams at the back of the top 25. Louisville is a team that really stands out to me there as a team that, if their offense makes a step forward, you know, Louisville was the last Big East team to get to the College World Series, correct? What was that, 2007, 2008?
Yeah, 2007.
Hard to tell what year it was because Chris Dominguez was there for so long.
Right.
You know, and he was on that team. But Louisville, this is like a team that is an Omaha caliber pitching staff for sure. How are they positioned to you know, step forward offensively? And who are maybe some other sleepers from the northern tier of the country?
Well, certainly St. John's is a team that we'd also consider for the top 25. And probably a lot of people will peg St. John's as the favorite in the Big East. But, you know, I like Louisville a little more. I think that the bullpen is special. I mean, that's what really excites me about Louisville with Derek Self and Matt Cook and a slew of really talented new guys.
You don't usually lose a Tony Zitch in your bullpen and get better, but they did.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, it allowed them to keep Cook back there in the bullpen to give him that 1-2 punch with Self rather than have to move him into the rotation because they've got Justin Amlung and Travis Tingle and Jeff Thompson who are all good guys with, you know, who know how to pitch and have good stuff. So, I mean, the arms are outstanding. The lineup needs to get a lot better. And,
right.
You know, I think it will be better. I don't know if it will be a lot better, but I think it'll be good enough that with their arms that they're going to make some noise.
They really need Stuart Imes to not hit 250.
Yeah.
And the guy who, you know, it's just amazing to me having seen Adam Engel last summer in the Coastal Plain League, and he's a physical guy, and to see that he basically had one extra base hit last year,
that's amazing.
They need a little bit more offense out of him. Aaron, wrapping up.
We should talk about the ACC probably at some point.
Okay, we've got the ACC. I was going to hit on the Big Ten real quick. Doesn't seem like there's a Big Ten team that's an Omaha challenger this year, but we do have, I think, an intriguing storyline. A couple years ago, we had Indiana. We pegged Indiana in 2009. They were going to be good for the first time in a long time. They got to a slow start, and they really rallied big time, won the Big Ten tournament.
Right.
We saw Minnesota, I guess, that same year. That was 2009. We saw Minnesota in 2010 really push
They won the first Fullerton. Two games in the Fullerton Regional.
Well, we saw Illinois last year eliminate Fullerton again, yeah. Go to the Fullerton Regional, and Illinois was very competitive. To me, the Big Ten has been better of late. A couple years before that, we had Michigan go to Vanderbilt, win a regional.
They hosted the year after that.
Correct. So, again, 2008. That. So 2007, they went to Vanderbilt and won the regional. 2008, they hosted. 2009, Indiana was legit. 2010. So we're just seeing that the last 5 years, the Big Ten baseball, I think, is better. It seems like Purdue is the preseason Big Ten favorite, and yet Purdue is the Chicago Cubs of college baseball. They have not won the Big Ten since 1907. What does Coach Doug Schreiber...
Is it 08?
I think it's 07. I think it's longer than the Cubs.
Wow.
What does Doug Schreiber, their longtime coach, have on hand that gives us this kind of enthusiasm about the Boilermakers?
Well, I think, first of all, it's star power. You know, it's you know,
which has rarely been said about Purdue
right.
baseball.
But Kevin Plawecki behind the plate, I think, is their best guy. I mean, he's a powerful catcher.
It's 1909, by the way.
It is 09. We were both wrong.
That's right. So we're both off.
You know, Plawecki's got good power. He had a nice summer in the Cape. He's a good defender. And he's a nice physical guy, and he's a leader. I think Cameron Perkins is a third baseman that is going to hit for some power. It's a good player for them. And you got Nick Wickren at the back of the bullpen, a power arm guy that gives you a nice anchor. It's too bad they lost Brad Schreiber to Tommy John surgery.
Right.
He would have been a key piece for them.
I think that makes Angelo Cianfrocco a little bit more important for them. First of all, if you're a college baseball fan, or if you're a Major League Baseball fan, and you remember Arki Cianfrocco, how would they have said his name at Stade Olympique? I'm putting you on the spot. It was probably pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
But first of all, his dad was Arki Cianfrocco. Second of all, the guy hit last year. He pitched a little bit down the stretch for them. He's a pretty interesting, important college baseball player. We've talked about some other intriguing two-way guys. I'm not saying that he's as good as Stephen Piscotty, but he's kind of going to be – he might play that role for them as far as an important bat and an important arm, because he goes from being a surplus arm to a more prominent role, I think, potentially for them right now for Purdue. So they have experience. They have power. I mean, like Cam Perkins, like you talked about, they're a really intriguing team. They can't host a regional, can they?
No, there's no way. I mean, I don't even think that's a possibility, but you know, they won't be in position to host a regional anyway. I mean, I think the Big Ten is going to be pretty competitive at the top. I mean, I still like Michigan State. I think that
Michigan State, Jake Boss has done a really nice job. We didn't mention them in the last 5 years because they haven't quite had that breakthrough yet. But that's a team that, where their trajectory of the last 5-6 years is consistently better and better.
And I think Minnesota with their 1-2 punch on the mound, you know, with Oaks and the left-hander. I mean, Minnesota is going to be good. It's Wendell's, the left-hander, that I'm thinking of, Tom Wendell. You know, Minnesota is I think they're always pretty competitive. They always compete. They're in the mix, too. So, and Ohio State has some talent. I mean, I think Ohio State's maybe not as complete as those other teams. But, and Nebraska's in the league now. You know, let's not forget.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that, which would be a different factor, I think, if they had Logan Ehlers. A little bit rebuilding there with their new head coach, Darren Erstad. But that is an intriguing storyline as well in the Big Ten. Let's wrap up talking about the Atlantic Coast Conference, Aaron. I know we glossed a little bit over the Big 12. I guess we're going to, very quickly, because we're close to an hour, ACC and Big 12 previews here a little bit. Let's touch on those two leagues. The ACC, we have North Carolina as the top team in that league. And the big stories in the ACC are Georgia Tech. It's the same old story. It's talent. Will it come through? And could this be the return of the U, Aaron? And the U got the biggest recent news, I suppose, in getting Peter O'Brien. It really seems like Peter O'Brien really changes things for them, because you see some real starting pitching depth at Miami with the return of Erickson. So their pitching seems like it's in pretty good hands. A lot of J.D. Arteaga clones over there. But their offense should be picked up this year with Peter O'Brien coming into the mix.
Yeah, boy, that was a huge, huge development for Miami. When they got O'Brien to transfer in, they lost the guy that we kind of thought was going to be their catcher of the future, Shane Rowland. He transferred out.
Right.
So they needed O'Brien to be eligible. And he gives them that second big bat in the middle with Ronnie Rodriguez. They needed that because, this team doesn't have a lot of punch other than that. I mean, they've got some
athleticism. They really were affected by the bats last year.
Yes, they were.
And their offensive catalysts last year were really speed guys like Melendrez and
Zeke
DeVos.
And
DeVos signed as an eligible sophomore. So they needed to come up with a new way to generate some offense. It seems like the biggest things for them are going to be, can Steven Perez make that jump as a junior coming out of high school? He was regarded in very similar terms to Devin Marrero.
Absolutely.
And he's not thought of the same way. So they need him to make that jump. And then Peter O'Brien. And talk a little bit about their pitching staff, because it sounds like that's really the strength of their team this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Eric Erickson coming back as a senior after being just basically out of baseball last year after having his second Tommy John surgery, comes back this year and is stronger than ever. I mean, he was better this fall than he has been through Harder. He's still got the same pitchability. This guy has won a lot of games in Miami.
So 88 instead of 82, basically, for
right.
Erickson.
I mean, that's what you're talking about. You know, and then you got Eric Whaley, who's got some, you know, a good power arm on potentially on Saturdays if they go with Erickson on Friday. And then Radzewski, who's another one of those pitchability left-handers that they've had. I mean, they've had a long line of – he's kind of the next in the Chris Hernandez mold.
And I think what it also lets them do this added depth in their rotation allows them to put Ensenosa in that moment of truth role in the bullpen. And
which where he fits best, I think.
That's it. I completely – he's actually their power arm where they can deploy him the way they want to. You know there's going to be a submarine guy that's going to come out of the bullpen and is going to contribute in the Jay Tesmer – Luke DeBold mold that the U has had for years. So they're going to have – I'm confident their bullpen's going to be good with a guy like Ensenosa back there, but they really couldn't afford to put him in the bullpen until they had that pitching depth. And even a guy like Ewing was really solid for them last year, and they like. So they have enough pitching depth to make the bullpen stronger.
I think the ACC is pretty wide open. You know, I don't know that there's a clear favorite. We peg North Carolina as a slight favorite because partly because I just like their toughness. I like that they have proven themselves now as a program that knows how to win. And last year, we both
really
were surprised. We
year.
Both were surprised by what they did last
no
year.
Doubt.
I mean, they did a lot with a good team, but not the talent that they had during the Omaha runs, the four straight Omaha runs. So
I think they were surprised by how good Colin Moran was. I don't think they were surprised by their toughness because I think Mike Fox prided himself on that. But they were surprised at how offensive they were. They thought the offense was going to come from a Levi Michael and a little bit maybe more speed. And they did have four guys who stole double figures and bases last year. And they still have some spark plugs, although they'll miss Michael's speed and versatility. They'll miss Ben Bunting being a grinder at the top
absolutely.
Of their lineup that they really trusted. But Chaz Frank is another Ben Bunting.
Yep.
And to me, the key for them is their pitching staff, the two sophomore Georgia kids they have. Ken Emanuel, we all saw last year, his development during the season and then how good he was in Omaha. Andrew Smith was more highly regarded coming out of high school than Emanuel was.
Right.
And he had a great fall for them. So then you can put Chris Munnelly, Benton Moss. They've got real pitching depth there. And then a bullpen that was the real strength for them early last year, gave them the confidence and the breathing room they needed as a team to develop. And that bullpen is still, for the most part, intact.
Absolutely. It's got to be another mixing and matching year. I mean, you know, Mike Fox made more trips to the bullpen last year probably than a lot of people because he had a great bullpen and he had options from both sides and a lot of different looks.
I think you have to give Scott Forbes a lot of that credit, too,
as
a pitching coach.
Absolutely.
This is a guy who was never a pitching coach before he came to North Carolina to have his first year as pitching coach be, okay, here's Bard Miller, no pressure, every scout's watching every single thing you do, and to keep developing the Alex Whites, the Adam Warrens, the Matt Harveys, and now Kent DeManuel's development, their pitching staff last year, the way that their bullpen developed last year. This guy's done a great job as a pitching coach.
Oh, absolutely.
He deserves a lot of credit. I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from Mike Fox, but Scott has shown that he can all comers, all kinds, lefty, righty. He helps them be better prospects, and he helps North Carolina win. I think it's a pretty impressive track record.
And then Georgia Tech is the other team that
you
hinted at.
Georgia Tech and Clemson, I think, the other kind of teams are in this mix.
And even Florida State is in the mix. I mean, I don't love Florida State's pitching, so I've got them at the bottom of that group. But, hey, they're Florida State. They're going to score a lot of runs. They've got, I think, a really good lineup coming back.
The arms are not there. Would not shock me if Florida State pitches better than they look on paper.
They usually do.
But honestly, I like the pitching coach change for them. I mean, it's not personal, but Mike Bell's more of a pro approach, and he had success as a college coach at Tennessee, as a pitching coach, and at Oklahoma. And I think that the Florida State pitching philosophy was geared to the old bats, where everything was sinker, 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 slider. And I think things are going to change with Mike Bell as opposed to their previous approach, and I think is a change that is a change for the better. I think it also shows a little bit about Mike Martin Sr. He's not afraid to change. The guy's been there for 30 years. His system works, but he's not afraid to tweak it. And I think I could speak for a lot of fans in college baseball, maybe not people in Omaha, but a lot of fans in college baseball, dadgummit, would love to see Mike Martin win the big one. It's not going to happen this year, but I think we'd all love to see that.
I agree.
I think it's good for college baseball, and Florida State's really good.
And you know what? This team won 46 games last year with Sean Gilmartin
and nothing after
on the mound. I mean, now they need Scantling and Seitz and Benincasa, those guys, to be better. So will that happen? We'll find out.
Who's the best player on these other teams, Georgia Tech and Clemson? Is that Richie Schaefer? Does he give maybe Clemson a little bit of an edge, or has Georgia Tech got a little bit more pitching? It seems feels like they have a little bit more lineup depth and a little bit more pitching than Clemson has.
I like Clemson's rotation better. I think it's, you know, Georgia Tech's rotation could be very good,
but
has a lot to prove.
Farmer.
I mean, those guys, you know, Buck Farmer is one guy here who I think is proven as a weekend starter for Georgia Tech.
Matt Grimes is also, you know, fourth round unsigned guy. So
very talented.
There's talent there. I think they're a little bit better college pitching staff in Clemson, a little bit better pro potential maybe in Georgia Tech. It's close.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty way to put it. I mean, Brady has certainly a lot of pro potential
right.
if he can stay healthy.
Right.
Huge if for Clemson. Dominic Leone and Scott Firth have power arms. They're not real big physical guys, but they can bring it. And you know, they probably got a little more – they're a little more proven than Grimes and Isaac. So
the thing I like about Georgia Tech is I think they have a little bit more power potential also than Clemson.
I agree.
Clemson has a little bit more questions to answer. I love Richie Schaefer. I mean, I really think this guy can really hit. I love the bat speed. But to me, like, Daniel Palka did it as a freshman. He has the now strength to hit for power, even with the new bats.
Yes.
My biggest question for Georgia Tech, actually, is really not the pitching. It's the defense. Mont Hyde was not up to shortstop last year. They wanted Tyler Gibson badly as a recruit. They didn't get him. He signed with the Tigers. I want to see Mont Hyde make the routine play at shortstop. I'm pulling the Victor Menocal card from 10 years ago. Let's see if Georgia Tech can get enough defense at shortstop. You know, that's a key for them. And last year, they had to flip Mont Hyde and Jacob Esch, and we'll see. Any other issue for Georgia Tech is what will they do when the pressure's on? Three straight years.
Home
regional losses, Aaron.
I mean, that's brutal, John. Three years in a row to host a regional and not win it. That's a killer. And they need to get over that hump mentally. And
maybe they just should not bid. Go on the road and see if it toughens you up.
Seriously,
a little bit.
But I mean, it feels like every year we're debating Georgia Tech and Clemson for some reason. I don't know
why.
But this year again, I mean, you could see them finishing in either order. I really like Georgia Tech's team on paper. On paper, I think they've got an Omaha team. We'll see if it all comes together. Talking to Danny Hall a couple weeks ago, he was a little concerned about the pitching. I mean, that's the one thing that he's not convinced about yet about his team. So we'll find out.
The one thing I'll give Georgia Tech credit for on the mound is they've taken some undrafted guys and turned them into first-round picks, Jed Bradley and Deck McGuire.
Yeah.
Two very nice examples of pitching development by Georgia Tech.
That's
and also
point.
Those guys really helped them win at the college
and
level.
And Mark Pope,
well.
I mean, another guy that developed really nicely into a very good college pitcher.
Great point. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. We're running late, but that's okay. It's internet bandwidth.
That's right.
And we're gonna finish up talking about the Big 12, Aaron. Our top Big 12 team is Texas A&M. We have the Aggies. We have the Longhorns. We have the Sooners in our rankings. We have future Big 12 team TCU, the Horned Frogs, in our rankings. But it feels like the Big 12 is A&M. A&M's to lose, I should say. They feel like coming off the Brad Childress and those guys breaking down that door last year, getting Omaha. Rob Childress, thank you. Brad Childress is the ex-Vikings coach. Rob Childress breaking down that door last year and getting to Omaha for the first time since, 1999. They have the core of that team back. Really, the key thing for them being the best team coming back is Ross Stripling. You get Stripling back as a senior. You put him in the rotation with Michael Wacha. We know their offensive philosophy worked with the new bats last year, but their pitching is at that top two is as good of a tandem in terms of experience and stuff and prospectingness as any team has. I mean, it's not the best, but they're going to be competitive with any team in a weekend at the
Absolutely.
Top of the rotation.
Yeah, I think, and that's the biggest reason I really like A&M. You hit it on the head. Michael Wacha and Ross Stripling, you're going to win two out of three most weekends, and you know they need an answer on Sunday. I mean, I think Derek Hadley could be that guy. You know, he's a guy that again needs to take a step forward. I mean, he's a competitive guy that they kind of think is a Clayton Ellert type and a guy who had a really nice career for them. And Ganny's double field as a freshman could be an impact guy potentially. You know, the bullpen, I think, has a couple of really nice experience pieces. I mean, I like Kyle Martin a lot. They need Esteban Uriagas to be better for over a consistent season. And they need some of their young guys to, you know, Daniel Mengden is a freshman that they are really relying on, a two-way guy.
Yeah, he's
a talented
most
catcher.
Player in the top 10, really.
I mean, seriously, he's going to be a critical piece for them. I mean, they've got other options behind the plate. I don't think he's not going to catch every day, but he's probably their best, most talented catcher, and he's also, you know, probably their most talented reliever. So it's a lot of burden on a freshman.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of guys do the catcher-pitcher thing, Buster Posey and Matt Wieters.
Yeah.
But it's not easy. It's rare, and those two guys were pretty special guys. So No pressure, Daniel Megden. Just try to be Buster Posey or Matt Wieters.
Right.
The rest of that of the league there, Aaron, we've got a lot of veterans at Oklahoma who kind of disappointed last year. A lot of that same cast, not all, but a lot of the same cast is back, and a lot of junior college guys mixed in. So the Sooners are still a top 25 team, but they're not ranked in a top 10 like they were really the last 2 years. And then Texas, I mean, a team that really kind of needs to see some of their younger players step forward, like an Eric Weiss who did in the spring but had a terrible summer with the college national team. And they're really looking for guys like Mark Payton or Cole Walla to deliver on the expectations that were there for them. Those guys really have to not be decent complementary players. Those guys have to really do it to make that pitching staff of Stafford, Milner, and Dischery really work.
That's it. I mean, you said it. It's Texas is going to pitch. They've got a ton of arms, ridiculous incoming class of freshmen.
We're going to
see a lot of those guys. But you know what? Stafford and Milner and Dischery, those guys are good, but it's not Youngman and Cole Green. I think they're going to be. I mean, look, they're Texas, okay?
Yeah.
They're going to win a ton of games. They're going to pitch and play defense.
They're going to have a belief in each other.
That's pretty good. The lineup has a lot of questions. It feels like it usually does there, and they usually are fine. But this team, you know, they don't have Brandon Loy anymore.
To me, Brandon Loy is a rock for that program for 3 years, and that's going to be tough. He's a tough guy.
They thought they were going to have C.J. Hinojosa come in and be the starting shortstop as an early enrollee freshman, very talented guy, potentially a first-round pick. You know, that didn't end up working out. He did not get in early. So now it's Christian Summers. Hey, he was a key recruit for them last year. Lanky, you know, rangy guy. He's got all the physical tools. Didn't have a great summer in the Cal Collegiate League. You know, not maybe what they hoped that he would do out there to build some confidence. He's got to have a big year, and they believe in him, but that's to me is maybe the key to this whole team.
That belief, Aaron, can really matter a lot. That's a terrible augie, really.
And then you mentioned the Sooners.
I did.
Bushyhead. Bushyhead.
Caleb Bushyhead is still there.
They've got a lot of guys who are still there that were on that Omaha team 2 years ago. Cody Ryan needs to bounce back. Bushyhead needs to bounce back. They need Drew Harrison to finally kind of step forward. He could be a nice two-way piece for them, too.
Yep.
He's got a good arm off the mound. Max White, another guy that had a bad year last year, really good 2 years ago. He needs to bounce back. They've got some nice veterans.
Max White, they could take it a little bit off his plate, moving him to first base.
Yeah.
Offensively, and they need him. They need him and Ryan to really bounce back.
And Jack Mayfield. I mean, they've got
That's
a bunch
a
of guys
example.
That need to bounce back. But they supplemented them with another strong group of junior college transfers. They're very good at getting, impact JC guys. And we're going to see a lot of competition here, which is what they had last year, which I think maybe covered some of their warts, is because they were able to mix and match with their lineup and get the hottest pieces in there. I like them on the mound a lot. I mean, Dylan Overton, I think, is
a lot of power arms
is
there.
And Overton, I think, is one of the more unheralded Friday starters who's very good. I think he's... he's it's good stuff. It's 88, 92. It's two good secondary pitches. It's competitiveness. Good left-hander. Jonathan Gray has a big arm. Can he make the transition from JUCO ball to D1 as a Saturday guy? That's sometimes people struggle with that, but he's got a big, big arm. Stephen Okert, they love.
And they love Damian Magnifico at the back of their
Magnifico
bullpen.
Magnifico had a magnificent fall.
That's right.
I mean, this guy was 98 to 102. With, he didn't even need much secondary stuff, but he made a little more progress with that, too. If he throws strikes consistently, boy, I mean, that's a nice weapon back there. They've got depth on the mound. I think they got depth all over the place. I think depth is their biggest strong suit with this team. So I think they're a team that will get better over the course of the season.
You could really use somebody having a JT Wise kind of year for them, or a Garrett Bouchel kind of year. They just need that one guy to step forward and take the flag and kind of lead that club.
Chemistry is the other thing that's key with them. Is Sonny Galloway? Sonny Galloway thinks that this team chemistry is a lot better than last year's, and he thinks if you take this team versus last year's team in a series, this team he'll take every time.
Interesting. Let's wrap up since we talked about everyone else basically in the top 25. We didn't really touch on Fullerton, but Central Florida, Cal State Fullerton's in the rankings. I think we've talked a lot about Fullerton over the years. I think that the key there is there's a little faith there in the program with a new head coach and Rick Vanderhook. That's a team that has, two pitchers who've logged Division I time?
Yeah.
But it's not surprising, even with that on their resume, that team that does have athleticism, that does have a really intriguing college infield is in our top 25. That's not a surprise. But Central Florida, it is a little bit of a surprise, Aaron, and this is kind of the payoff year for Terry Rooney and that coaching staff that took over 3 years ago. Terry Rooney had been at LSU, helped recruit a lot of that bulk of that 2009 national championship team, and now comes to Central Florida, now in his fourth year, I suppose. Really has the guy that he wants there, and they got Ronnie Richardson back when he was an eligible sophomore. They have some power. Talk a little bit about what makes the Golden Knights a threat to rise to the top of Conference USA.
I think they're pretty balanced. You know, I mean, it's like you said, I think a payoff year is a good way to put it. They've been building toward this season. I mean, that first class that they brought in was a good class. I want to say it was like a top 12 class. It was a good class.
It was high in the rankings.
And those guys are juniors now, you know, and you've got, Sweeney, Darnell Sweeney as shortstop is a really exciting player. I mean, it's a very athletic guy.
Right, and the athleticism is the key for him.
And a spark plug offensively.
They have
Richardson.
They have it with Richardson and Sweeney. That's been something, an emphasis for Terry Rooney. And they've gotten enough athletes to campus.
And their team also,
like Marlette, but they have some nice freshmen coming in.
And their team also, as a coaching staff, they believe in building with power bats and power arms. Rooney always says that. And you know, look, they hit a bunch of home runs last year. They're offensive every year.
Right.
And last year they had DJ Hicks and Jonathan Griffin. They lost Griffin. They still have Hicks. And he's a guy that, you know, is just a nice big physical guy you want in the middle of your lineup. The question with them, I think, will be on the mound a little bit. I mean, I like their arms, but it's not gonna. The staff, I don't think, blows you away, and it's they need some guys to be good right away. I mean, Eric Skoglund's a guy that coming in.
Right. Skoglund and Nuss, the two freshmen coming in, feel like they have a real potential to play an important role. And scouts liked Skoglund last year in the draft. I remember got some Chris Sale comparisons, and then Gary Nuss had a nice summer, I believe, in the Florida Collegiate Summer League. Where he was the number one prospect. So they have some arms. But we still think Rice with Wayne Graham didn't get his dream last year of getting Anthony Rendon to Omaha. But they have an Omaha-caliber team this year because they're a team with all kinds of depth. Maybe not the star power, but an intriguing – again, there are a lot of intriguing two-way players in the top 10. JT is at Shagwa. I know they'd like him to just focus on pitching, but he's a potential – impactful two-way player who might factor into the lineup and the bullpen. And their bullpen just sounds otherworldly, and they have a legit Friday guy in Kubica.
Boy, I mean, that's you're right. I mean, it's the depth on the mound. The depth is just scary on the mound. I mean, this, I think, is the best bullpen in college baseball. I think it's even better than Florida's bullpen because I think you've got, the Sims-Shagwa 1-2 punch. Woo. Boy, that's awfully
pretty good.
And
Sims and is a special arm. We knew that coming out of high school. And then Shagwa just lit it up in the Cape.
And then you've got Tyler Duffy as a third guy that's got a really good arm and is a proven, experienced guy. You've got different looks from the right side and the left side. The staff is fantastic. I think Austin Kubica is a guy we both really like. I wouldn't be surprised to see him have an All-America sophomore year. And the lineup, to me,
like Jeremy Rathjen kind of coming back to full health is a big key for them.
Big key. I mean, he's a guy that is an offensive player that is, again, an experienced player. He can run. He can hit. He's got some power. I mean, he can do a little bit of everything for you. They need Fuda. You know, again, another guy coming back. He needs to stay healthy and have a big year. Michael Rattery, offensive player, moving to left field. I think that takes some pressure off him.
Right.
He struggled second base, of course, as we know. I think he can just relax, concentrate on hitting, and I expect him to have a monster year. I think it helped actually in some ways that Rendon had to DH all last season because he allowed Shane Helscher to get his feet wet at third base. Now you've got a proven, experienced left side of the infield with Helscher and Derek Hamilton. You've got a great catcher, one of the more unheralded players out there, and Craig Manuel.
Craig Manuel.
Yeah, their best bat handler, got a great last name and a fantastic leader and catch and throw guy.
No relation.
It's a good team. I think this is the year they can finally get back to Omaha.
Actually, I say no relation. I do remember when I was 14 visiting cousins in Houston. I wonder. I have to ask my dad about that. He'll probably know. Oh yeah, that is your cousin. Yeah, I don't know him. That's as good a way of ending to wrap up the podcast, Aaron. We're not going to make preseason picks here because we're saving that for the issue. But suffice it to say, if Florida doesn't make it to the College World Series, we'll be shocked. And I think we'll be a little bit shocked if South Carolina doesn't make it to the College World Series.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be Omaha without them. I mean, their fans have overrun the Drover, but thanks to the Drover, there's always room for everybody. That place is
Drover, sponsor this podcast already. I've been asking you for years.
Well, they don't need us. They were on Man vs. Food this year. So Man vs. Fuda, so they don't need us this year. Aaron, it's great to have you in the office. We're going to have a BAFO college preview issue. I'll let loose that Michael Roth is on the cover in a little bit of a departure. But most of our college preview issue cover boys make it to the major leagues. We've got Jorge Reyes has got a little ways to go yet, but Mike Stutz on the cover a couple years ago, already in the big leagues. Bobby Brownlee is about the only one I can think of.
What about Joe Savory?
He didn't make it. Oh, he was in the big leagues last year. Yeah, absolutely. Joe Savory, the 94 late in the year.
Fantastic.
For the Philadelphia Phillies after shortening up his arm stroke when he moved to first base. Joe Savory, one of the best stories of the minor leagues last year, gave up pitching, was playing first base in A-ball, hit his way to double-A. They got into an extra inning game that went so long they got him on the mound. He bumped the low 90s, and they were like, hey, it threw pretty well out there. And basically, being an infielder had shortened up his arm stroke back to the way it used to be. And he was pumping 94 miles an hour in the Grandes Ligas last year.
That's awesome.
Joe Savory, we love Joe Savory. Guys who are great college baseball players like that, we want to see those guys succeed in the big leagues. It's good for Major League Baseball, and it's good for college baseball. So I think we have a chance, Aaron, to have a nice era of college baseball with the changes in the CBA. I think you have we've just talked about all these first-round picks have been coming to college baseball.
Yeah.
And we have a chance of more elite talent coming to college baseball. There are more teams trying in college baseball. The ballpark boom that has ended in the minor leagues still seems like it's going on in college baseball. This is a great time to be a college baseball fan, and I'm obviously psyched. I'm obviously gifted about this season.
Yeah.
No, I'm obviously psyched about college baseball.
And the new ballpark this year, I believe, is besides Arizona State moving, is Texas A&M. I've heard great things about their project. That's going to be one of the new crown jewels.
Is it really? I didn't know they were building it at College Station.
It's a major renovation, I guess, technically. But
probably
it's
probably based on kind of what they did at Texas. Basically redid Dish Falk, and they're going to do the same thing at Olsen Field, mm-hmm. I believe, at Texas A&M. So I think the ballpark everybody's chasing is South Carolina. That's the Palace, and you got a chance to just see that last week.
So between South Carolina and LSU and Ole Miss and Texas and Arkansas, I mean, it's hard to pick. I think they're all, from everything I've heard about the ones I haven't been to and the ones that I have been to. Boy, I mean, we've got a great bunch of ballparks now.
Fun time to be a college baseball fan. Fun week to be a Baseball America with Aaron Fitt back in the office. And I hope it was a fun podcast for you listening at home. Obviously, the college podcast every Monday during the regular season. I'll be coming at you during the regular season in 2012 and in the postseason, and much more at baseballamerica.com, where we really cover college baseball the way it's supposed to be, like it's a passion, and also like it's a profession. I try to merge those two things together. So much more to come in 2012 here on the Baseball America podcast. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.